Whoa, I'm getting dizzy.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The thing about the stock market is it's supposed to be a long-term investment. The day-to-day fluctuations are going to happen. Although I have to say, Wall Street has been unusually volatile lately. Yesterday, the Dow gained 331 points. That's almost 550 points in 2 days. But then on Monday, we had the Dow dropping 237. If we don't have a big plunge today or tomorrow, November won't look nearly as bad as it might have. So the Dow starts at 13,289. The NASDAQ is at 2662 after an 82-point gain. That's 3%. The S&P 500 was up 40 points to 1469. It was also a big day for Asian stocks. In Japan, the Nikkei was up 2.5%. European shares are a tad higher so far. Auto parts maker Delphi is in a New York bankruptcy court today. The company hopes to get out of bankruptcy by the end of the year. It could face all kinds of problems if it doesn't. Elisa Roth reports.
With the credit markets in a real mess, now's not the best time to try to emerge from bankruptcy.
Loans are getting considerably more expensive and exit financings as well.
Standard & Poor's analyst Greg Lemo-Stein says that's especially true for companies like Delphi.
Of course, you've also have in the automotive sector weakening economic signals. For 2008, the outlook looks shakier than in past years.
If Delphi can't manage to pull out of bankruptcy by year's end, it'll face all kinds of penalties, including a massive tax bill related to pension costs and legal fees that keep adding up. Lemo-Stein says Delphi will emerge eventually. What's less clear is what the company's final restructuring plan will look like. It's not just Delphi's workers and creditors who'll be watching today's hearing. Three other auto parts makers are also trying to exit bankruptcy, so Delphi's outcome could be a bellwether of things to come. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
I like a little salt on my food, I'll be honest. I said a little salt. Unfortunately, there's way too much of it in most prepared food. The average American eats twice the recommended daily amount of sodium. That has led to premature heart attacks and strokes and a hefty health care bill. Today in Washington, the FDA holds a public hearing on salt. More now from John Dimsdale.
Today's hearing is a response to a petition filed by the Center for Science in the Public Interest.
The FDA needs to do everything it can to lower sodium levels in processed and restaurant foods.
Executive Director Michael Jacobson says 75% of our salt intake comes from processed groceries and restaurant meals. The government encourages reducing salt, but Jacobson says without actual limits, that policy is toothless.
It's tough for one company to lower sodium levels when its competitors continue to have high levels of sodium because people will continue to prefer the saltier food.
The industry is already reducing salt at their customers' request, says Robert Earle with the Grocery Manufacturers Association.
If food companies are already doing these types of things and competing on health and nutrition, government requirements across the board may not be necessary.
The FDA hasn't proposed any new sodium regulations, but it might once it hears the public's comments. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Introducing ThriveQ, an online tool that helps you know where you stand on your path to retirement. More at ThriveQ.com. And by BNY Mellon Wealth Management. Since 1784, helping successful individuals and families protect and maximize wealth. BNYMellonWealthManagement.com. Conversations from the Corner Office, Dialogues with Top CEOs, is supported by Society for Human Resource Management. Online at shrm.org.
Foreclosures nearly doubled last month compared to last year. There were 250,000 of them in the U.S. Congress is trying to think up ways to fix the mortgage market. Our economics correspondent Chris Farrell believes getting rid of tax breaks for homeowners would be a good start. That includes the mortgage deduction on your taxes. Chris, are you serious?
Yes, I am. I mean, I know this is going to make me popular. It's like going against mom and apple pie. It's one of those sacred cows in Washington. But we have this boom in real estate that went bust, and we have all these problems going on right now. But if we take a step back, one way of looking at what happened is because of all these tax subsidies, we overinvest. We put too much of our money into real estate. And yes, I would get rid of the home mortgage deduction. I would get rid of the favorable treatment of capital gains, more importantly, when it comes to real estate. I probably can't make a case or convince enough people on the home mortgage deduction, but I think I can make a pretty compelling case on that capital gains.
And exactly what's the situation with the capital gains on housing versus, say, stocks?
Right. The treatment of capital gains changed in 1997, and we just ended up favoring real estate. Imagine, you're a couple. You own a home. You sell it for a $500,000 profit. Zero capital gains tax. Now, when this law was passed in 1997, the capital gains tax rate on stocks was 20%. That capital gains tax rate is now 15%. Now, no math genius, but to me, it seems we really favored real estate with your investment money versus stocks. Why would we want to do that? That's a mistake. That's what I would change.
And I think the one argument you're going to get here, Chris, is that the whole idea of the tax subsidy is to encourage people and allow people to own their own homes when they might not be able to do otherwise.
Well, here's the economist's answer to that. People are still going to own homes. They might be smaller homes. They might not be McMansions. Because what the subsidy has really done is encourage people to buy bigger homes. And with the conventional wisdom, it drives me crazy, but, you know, buy as much home as you can afford, right? Well, the only reason why that's out there is because of the subsidies, because Uncle Sam picks up part of the tab. You take away that subsidy, what's going to happen? People are still going to own homes, but they're going to say, rather than buy as much home as you can afford, it's going to be, eh, I'm not going to put so much money into housing. I'm going to put more in the stocks and bonds.
All right, Chris Farrell, our economics correspondent. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
If you'd like to give Chris a piece of your mind, our website is marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.